Hello and welcome to Dicepunx, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, Selden District copes with the aftermath of the death throes of PSS, while the Frontispiece 4 organize, plan, and recuperate. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hey, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Cato Burke, a.k.a. Hecate, who is really excited to not have a cop in the group anymore.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Callisto Armitage, the artist formerly known as Ossifer.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Luke Byrne, who is realizing perhaps that they're missing out on other things in life, but there's still so much crime to be done.
Hello, I am Nick, and I will be playing Ing, an android drone operator. He's got just as many hands as he used to, but they're in different places now.
Oh, thank you, players. Let's get right into it with our recap of last time, this time courtesy of Byrne.
So, in the course of getting fired, Cal got me access to Ramirez's terminal, which had government-tier spyware on it. So that rapidly ceased to be an opportunity. Hopefully I burnt that connection before it got wind of, well, me. I'm looking into it. Brownway arrived with bruises, red tear gassy eyes, and a thirst. She caught up on the state of Ing's arm, which is apparently extremely bespoke, but unfortunately didn't blow Gorister up. Didn't even electrocute him. Not even a little bit. Sadly. Upon Cal's unemployed return to the frontispiece, Cato offered them a drink, which was declined. I mentioned to Cal the deep and abiding problems with Ramirez's machine. Cal, helpfully, said that explained some things. We voted to read Cal's associate, Tama, in on the state of affairs as a potential additional bit of muscle. The evening progressed, as did Ing's operation. Eventually, everyone fell asleep. Even me. Well, Goritzer left, but he doesn't really count. And now it is morning.
And so it is. Everyone had a fairly late night, but I will leave it up to, you know, each character's player when you are rising fresh as a daisy, or I guess in Cal's case, having slept in an uneasy chair. So freshness pending, I suppose. Yeah, I'll leave it up to our players when each of them is likely to rise, and what exactly it is that you all will get up to now that time has finally advanced to the new calendar day. It is Friday, February the 6th, 2020. Yeah. So, who's up first?
Yep. Well, I'm not sure when it will be safe for me to move around, but assuming that I was left with some little bit more specific instructions, sure, by Gorister, or Gorister himself comes in. Either way, when I'm up and about, then was I advised not to move it around, or maybe I can't move it around just yet. So right now it's maybe just dead weight, but
you were advised to spend the night and being as still as you possibly could, you know, doing your rest cycle in that spot. And we can, of course, you know, rule that there were more specific instructions than I verbalized in my Gorister voice last time, because there would kind of have to be. But the warning signs that Gorister told you to look out for have not manifested. And something that you have discovered is that it's actually kind of difficult to keep your new hand totally still in the way that you can keep your other hand currently still attached on the other side totally still. It does require like little twitches and movements, which makes sense. It did that when you had it just in like a substrate. So, but it is sort of uncanny. I believe that you have rough motor function currently, but no real sensory input and no especially fine motor control. Those are going to be things that require some adaptation of the connecting tissue and are going to be fine-tuned over follow-up appointments, essentially, with Gorister. The connections themselves have been made, but the adjustments to your processing and transmission still need to be sort of done on a firmware level, shall we say.
Okay.
So,
well, wonderful.
You can move it some, is the short answer.
Yeah. Well, it feels very strange, much squishier than I'm used to. You know, keep meaning to remind myself that it's quite fragile compared to what I'm used to. So yeah, you know, kind of interacting gingerly, if at all, with the world with my left hand. But I'm curious whether this is, you know, maybe too early in the day, but I'm interested in following up on Dev's invitation to join them at the nightclub.
Yeah, well, certainly nightclub activities will not be apace, but, you know, you have the name and the internet will afford the location if you wish to investigate. I am currently clicking over in a tab to make sure that I get it right. Canny Valley is the name of the club.
Okay. I'll also send out a text to those that are not physically present, inviting them to tag along as well.
Okay. I believe that everybody in all of the player characters plus Bronwy and Apatia have slept at the frontispiece. So Apatia...
Proximal, if not precisely present.
Apatia and Cal are like in the room that you are sleeping. Rest cycling in. Apatia arranged a little bit more comfortably than Cal. And then Kato and Bronwy are over in Kato's room, and Burn is in Burn's little hacker hole.
Okay.
And I'll fiat if it's okay that I woke up before Bronwy did with the eye snap opening thought, do I have enough blood to donate blood at this point? So I am staring directly at the ceiling when that text message comes in.
Sure. I will assume that, Burn, you are likely to not be an especially early riser this Friday.
If God had wanted me to see the sunrise, he would have scheduled it for noon.
And, you know, Rob and I leave it in your hands. You know, what level of activity in your vicinity will be sufficient to stir you awake here?
Conversation, for sure. Movement within a 10-foot radius of me, likely. But that probably would not be as prone to startling me awake with a snort as conversation.
Sure. Apatia, for her part, sleeps through Ing coming out of their rest cycle. But, you know, I guess, Ing, when you start, like, moving about the space, you know, Cal and Apatia will both in their different ways you know, start to come out of sleep. But yeah, you can send this message, you know, about your intentions here. I guess if you were entering your rest cycle around 1:30 a.m., when are you probably getting going here?
Yeah, let's call it 9 or 9:30. Give it a good eight hours.
Yeah. And that I think accords pretty well with, you know, Cato coming awake around that time and so on. So it looks, Cato, like you're gonna be the only one to see this message, you know, as it comes in. And I'm gonna rule that you are aware of the Canny Valley, but it's one of a, you know, double handful of like longer term businesses in the area that you only have like secondhand knowledge and connections to. It is primarily an Android operated and oriented establishment. So it is of some interest to you, but it's not like you've got like
invite or connection.
Yeah. I was going to say like a standing NB's night out, you know, with the fam at the Canny Valley.
Yeah, I'm going to say my arms are back behind my head, so the shorter arm kind of as as quietly as I can zzz forward to type out a quick message and say, and I say, sounds like a good time to me.
So you got at least one ticker.
All right.
So this text is distributed at 9:30. I imagine that is the sound of it going off is enough to actually wake me up, or the vibration of it in my pocket.
You get an auto response that basically amounts to check back at noon.
Out of office, standing for all mornings.
Yeah. No. Like something on the order of, you know, please check in during business hours, which are noon to 2:30.
So yeah, we get our out of office reply from Burn, and you know, Cal, your phone, you know, sort of buzzes you, not in a jolt, but sort of in a however much you know, older person sound effects you want applied here. And Ing, when you start to actually move, that will rouse Apatia as well.
Okay. Yeah. I am touching various things in the room with my left hand and, you know, putting it up and down to try to stimulate some motion of blood.
Yeah, you're being particularly careful with it because it's not giving you the kind of sensory feedback that your previous experience would lead you to expect from a limb. You can't tell whether something is warm or cool, hot or cold. You can't tell whether something is smooth or rough by touching it. You can't really tell how much pressure you're putting on it, though you can tell whether something is hard or soft by touching it. That seems to be coming through.
Yeah, fascinating. But also probably distracting for those that grew up with hands.
So probably around that time, then perhaps Cato is, you know, getting up and going. You think for a moment that you have caused Bronwy to wake up, but it turns out that she just kind of stirs and with a very adorable unconscious pout steals some percentage of the mass of your pillows and then rolls over grumbling sleepily.
Enjoy.
I'm gonna do my best.
Knowing I don't have to actually, you know, don't have to tell her twice.
I'm gonna do my best to approximate the noise you get after that, though whether there's a response or not as an exercise for the listener, go something like
I exit the room quietly. I'm pleased that she's getting rest, which she clearly needed. So I sort of rejoin the common area.
Yeah. And so everyone out there is now some variation on awake and stirring. Apatia, seems to be booting up, might be the way to put it. She is moving, but her augment eyes are currently at different unmoving focal lengths as she sort of like moves her head to one side to another and sort of sways in place. It looks like she may be another couple of moments before she's like able to carry on a conversation.
I am also booting up, but in a less mechanical fashion. I am frowning at a blank space in the wall, just staring, no thoughts. Just trying to get my mind in order and get it shake off the haze enough to function.
I borrow some of Burn's coffee and distribute it to the group.
Even unconscious, it's my coffee.
So yeah, you you know, become the coffee fairy for a little while, and
I take the lion's share.
Yeah, I was trying to decide if Apatia takes any. I think she probably does, but basically it says, don't pour me a whole mug, or maybe just let me have a little bit off the top of someone else's. It's a little caffeine perks me up. A lot of caffeine makes me a nervous wreck.
I'll finish whatever you don't want.
She nods with a bright smile that is somewhat bleary, and sips a few sips of coffee, and then hands you the rest of it. And in relatively short order, everyone is about as caffeinated as they intend to be. Is there anything that anyone particularly wants to make sure they do or say before caravanning over to the Canny Valley?
I will note that whenever I rise from the chair, it is slowly with great effort and a lot of discomfort.
I take a look at the books, as it were, and figure out how I'm going to pay Gorister that hazard pay while worrying a bit and stretching exactly unlike a cat.
Yeah. So you basically identify a set of expenses that are the furthest from being due, and you go ahead and pencil in slight overpayments for them to be entered into the official bookkeeping, which is done electronically. The better to accord with expectations of auditors, as well as to be manipulable on the fly by your live-in gremlin. But what this effectively means is that you have less liquidity and a narrower margin for anything going wrong. And mechanically, what that's going to do is, for your next economic shock roll only, you will count as having a burden of 4. So your burden does not change to 4, but when you roll just that roll, if anything else involves burden between now and then, it'll still be 2. But for the next mission start, when you roll economic shock, it'll count as 4.
I am that much more likely to end up in a situation of economic shock.
Exactly. You are less liquid. You know, you have less ability to reallocate or be flexible. So,
all right.
Well, it's sure a good thing that we're taking, I think, it. How does it work with living together? Is it you take the average take the lower?
I would have to double check to be sure it's either a flat reduction or the average. But yes, you will, be able to apply the sharing the burden to that as well.
Well, Peter is robbed. I tap out a transfer to Gorister's account, and Paul is paid.
I make a note in a private, like, notes app to just refer to Gorister as Paul for a full fucking day.
I need to double check and see if I gave him a first name.
It could be Paul Gorster.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would spend a fate point to declare that story detail.
Mm-hmm. In the ledger, he's now listed as Kwisatz Haderach.
One of the great joys in
it
life.
Occasionally gets crossed out and substituted with Wormy Boy. B-O-I, to be very clear.
Of course, yeah, yeah. I assumed, but yeah.
One of the great joys in life is hearing how other people heard names and proper nouns in speculative fiction pronounced.
Yep.
I have always had that CH as a hard sound.
That makes way more sense. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Haderach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yours makes more sense.
Well, yeah. but also, like, I think that all the time, and then it turns out that I'm totally wrong sometimes, so...
I mean, this is probably the first time I've ever said it out loud, I've realized. Yeah,
probably. Not unreasonable. So, leaving behind the Dune references for a moment, that is the solution that you come to, and its effects, as well as... Burns trolling alongside it. I have, while we were talking about that, established that I don't have anywhere where Gorister's first name is written down. I do have a distant memory of maybe having given him one, but I'll keep it off mic for now. Watch it have been in like the second episode already, and I'm just like playing coy for no reason.
Nick? I had just assumed that Gorister was his first name.
Not unreasonable under the circumstances, but no, last name, as it turns out. So, once caffeine is brewed and books are cooked, everybody sort of, you know, checks in and we're ready to go. And, you know, Cato being the proprietor. Actually, it's a Friday. You're leaving at like 10 a.m. to go somewhere. Is this just an out to lunch sign, or is it just closed, or are you posting anything about it? How are you handling the business part of this?
Yeah, I think I post that say we are closed for cleaning and maintenance. although there is if one notices, there is a hashtag at the bottom of the post which says out to lunch.
So sorry, to be clear, was this like brunch at this club, or was this a later in the evening thing?
This was Aang deciding to just go see what was up, without really knowing if it was even going to be like open to the public or not.
Yeah, my understanding was we were, making an executive decision that today is a day for the group, and I'm not going to attempt to do any business, which makes me nervous given that there's additional money that needs to come in, but in for a pound, in for a paw.
Well, I was going to say that probably in universe, the way that anybody encountering the closing would think about it is, oh, right, there was like a deadly police riot yesterday. Like, it makes sense probably that some businesses would be closed.
Also, probably not the biggest textbook shopping day of the year, the day after a deadly police riot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
A deadly
Although
police
maybe
riot.
Maybe people want to read up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At about like the 70% mark of the first quarter of spring semester. It's not not an auspicious day. The burden trails do not predict record profits today.
No. Projections are looking bad. Eventually we'll reopen, we'll get things, going again. We'll maybe even put some Kumiko fanfic on the shelves and give new meaning to the word tanky.
Damn.
Nice. I love that.
How long have you been sitting on that, Drew?
Seconds.
I was laughing at the jab when the hook hit me. Oh.
Well said. On Volcart counts.
Sorry, I gotta... All right. I'm back on it. So, Cato, you go to open the side door, having kind of, posted your closure message, hashtag out to blunch. And you go to open the side door, and you find yourself staring across kind of the width of the alleyway here at, I guess you wouldn't probably know her by sight. But Cal, you'll recognize her as Tama, has come by. And
can I retcon something?
Because
I thought about I'll run it by you first, but I think in the spirit of things, Cal might have provided coordinates like behind the back entrance to the front.
I believe that was stated.
Oh, okay.
I think that you did have Tama coming around to this entrance,
rather than not going necessarily the frontispiece itself, so I would have an opportunity to convene with her and gauge her comfort with being brought into the group.
Gotcha. Well, I had the part where you had given her coordinates and instructions to like come by, but we hadn't gotten anything other than acknowledgement of that since then. So what I was going to have her doing currently is trying to figure out if this was the correct door. And so, if it's not what you as Cal would have done in an ideal world, I think it's perfectly reasonable to, if you're willing to, say that, right now, and much less so yesterday evening, Cal is not necessarily operating at full capacity here because of the kind of days that you have had recently, if that's acceptable.
I am comfortable with that.
Okay. So, for the, listeners, to be reminded and, to introduce the other characters, if not the players who were here for it before, Tama is a somewhat older woman, maybe not quite to the degree that Cal sort of like gives off, older vibes. But, shall we say this? Looking at Tama gives you the idea that she's older than me, and I'm not particularly young, officially into middle age. And has a fairly prominent scar kind of to one side of her left eye and just enough to kind of like pull the left side of her mouth a little bit on her face. She has sort of short, dark hair that's slowly going to gray and a sort of medium complexion that gives the impression of being weathered. Dark eyes and a very solid presence. She's not actually bulky, but she gives the impression of strength. And she is currently wearing let's say the getup is the kind of effect that tactical accoutrement try to create, but with less ostentatious and spendy pointless accessories, just sort of like practical, sort of lightly paramilitary look. Yeah, so the door opens and Tama, phone in one hand, is sort of like looking slightly blankly at the group of people sort of brought up slightly short by her presence, and looks a little squirrely, and then goes, "Does anybody here have, does the name Revenant mean anything in particular to you?" She kind of winces.
My eyebrow quirks with an audible and then I look behind me to Cal.
I lean forward and realizing that it's our stand up and kind of straighten my shirt out abruptly and walk over. Hi, Tama.
She narrows her eyes a little bit and goes, "Hi. You're..." Looks at the people in the doorway and goes, "Someone I'm sure I know."
I don't know why that broke me as much as it did. I nod once and say, "The one and only. This is the team I've been working with. I trust them, but given the current circumstances, I thought it was appropriate to expedite the nature of our work.
She nods again and says, well, we're outdoors right now, so where's the party heading?
I look at Ing.
Yeah, Canny Valley. Heard of it?
Her eyebrows sort of do a big journey toward the top of her forehead, and she goes, yeah, rumor has it that it's Law Zero money laundering operation.
Well, that's an interesting bit of news. Just going to meet somebody over there. Not really in the mood to live it up right now, so hopefully we can get in before the crowd and, you know, if it's open at all, just have a conversation.
She glances at her phone and goes, yeah, I don't think it'll be crowded just yet. With a tone of extreme understatement that I may or may not have carried across in my line read, so speak. But says, well, I haven't had the pleasure of visiting it myself, so if you don't mind one more, I'll tag along, and maybe if we can get them to play some loud music, we can have a more private conversation. When Tama grins, the scar has an effect on it, but you get the feeling she's playing it up to make it look like more kind of wicked.
Right on. Tama, then. Name's Ing.
Pleasure.
I straighten abruptly, like I'm suddenly remembering myself, and quickly introduce the party.
Mm-hmm. Tama, you know, sort of very courteously says hello and introduces herself to everybody. And her face gives away only that she finds you a very interesting group. but otherwise, not too much. I guess
when my introduction comes, I return the grin, and it may not be a menacing effect, but it's certainly a memorable one, what with the asymmetrical face and the purple eyes and all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's... No one here gets the vibe that Tama is uncomfortable with anyone here, but it probably occurs at some point during the introductions to pretty much everybody that Tama's the only one here without any, like, augments. Like, I mean, Ing has the flesh augment now, but otherwise it would be mechanical, right? Cal has, you know, the various bits that we've discussed before. Kato is doing Kato's thing, yeah. And then Apatia, of course, has the cascade of cranial augments and the eyes and the fangs and everything. And so, like, it is sort of like an interesting contrast, because the scar suggests that maybe Tama has had injuries that could have been addressed via augmentation, but does not have any. Though, you know, she doesn't say or do anything to give you the idea that she particularly, like, has an opinion or a reaction or anything. But, you know, she says, well, it's nice to meet everybody. I couldn't have hoped for a more colorful introduction on a Friday morning, but following you, I'm curious to hear the story. Well, I hope, I guess I get to hear the story. The wickedish grin comes back.
My lip quirks up in kind and says, as I say, yeah, you will.
As you all head in the direction of the Canny Valley, which is not inside Selden District, but isn't far from Selden District. Tama moves kind of closer to Cal, isn't trying to, like, be inaudible, right? But is sort of addressing this, you know, to Cal in particular, and says, I don't know why I didn't think you'd be around my age, but it kicks ass that you are. That's old gal's got to stick together, and offers you a fist bump.
I snort gently and return it, though with the awkward nature of someone who does not often extend fist bumps.
Mm-hmm. But she, you know, sort of just starts lightly chatting, you know, not trying to fill all of the silence, but just kind of saying the little things that, you know, come into her head as you pass by various parts of Armitage on your way through and out of Selden District. Let's see. It might be around about this time that Bronwy is waking up and you may or may not get up at this time, Burn, but you probably will be awakened enough to sort of decide that by Bronwy at one point going, "Hello? Anybody still here?" Whether you want to do anything with that or not is up to you, but I figured I'd extend the opportunity.
Yeah, or where's everyone else? Comes over the loudspeakers as I, as like systems are visibly being checked.
Mm-hmm. I suppose if you're checking systems, may see Bronwy sort of like jolt a little bit at the PA system being used and look around briefly and then, you know, look at her device and go, "Oh, it looks like everybody who woke up went to a nightclub on Friday morning. Well, they left us some coffee. It doesn't seem like it's too stale."
You convey the most important information. Thank you.
I try. Pours herself some coffee and then adds approximately that much sugar as well. In due time, those who are out and about arrive at the Canny Valley. As a building, it was clear that this was originally constructed to be like a first floor with maybe up to three businesses and then subsequent floors of residences, but it has now all been turned into this nightclub. It is sort of painted in like a high gloss sort of like metallic shade of like grays and blues, like a gradient from blue to gray up towards the top, and has some very, that's what I'm going to look for here, very on the nose color choices for neon, sort of, you know, Matrix and Blade Runner, evoked here, and says Canny Valley nightclub, dance hall, bar, grill.
Nice.
Grill is in quotation marks. None of the rest of it is just grill. The doors are metal sliding affairs, no windows in them, but it has a sign that says, you know, doors open 9 p.m. ID required, and then Friday through Sunday cover charge, and then lists an amount that's, you know, not quite the equivalent of one cash. Otherwise than hours signage, there are some schedules and flyers and things kind of posted somewhat haphazardly in the vicinity. For instance, you learn that Rococo Basilisk is going to be performing tonight and tomorrow night. There are a number of other acts that are going to be featured evidently next weekend. It is unclear what kind of act this is, but there's a performers of some kind under the name Icon Orgasm, the apostrophe.
Strong.
It seems like a relatively happening space. No one seems to be in evidence, like at the door in the club or anything like that. But in, you do spot a familiar chassis. And actually, I suppose, Cal, you will also recognize the android EMT who helped to tend to Culex Entwistle outside of the Event Horizon offices just yesterday, if you can believe it, the number of sessions that that's been just kind of off to one side, seeming to loiter, still though in the EMT gear. Hasn't said anything, hasn't approached you, but is looking in your direction.
All right. All noticing this EMT, I will go over and introduce myself, because I think that we've just seen each other from a distance before.
It's likely that they overheard your conversation with Dev Random as they were close by, but you didn't exchange any words with them. Whether or not Nick remembers it, Ing would almost certainly remember hearing Dev call this individual Mebby, which I will spell in the side chat here. They don't say anything as you approach, leaving you to make the opening gambit.
Okay. No, mate. Name's Ing. Couldn't help but notice the good work that you were doing the other day.
So Dev Random has like kind of an LCD plate on the front of her face to emote with. Mebby does not have any such thing, and in fact has comparatively fewer facial features than most androids. So when I say that they give you a blank look, I don't necessarily mean it as an expressive gesture, just that that does seem to be the kind of look that they can give, full stop. But they do turn their head in your direction, and a sort of very femme voice emerges from what is otherwise a relatively androgynous looking chassis that says,
"Yes, I remember you. How can I help you?"
"Well, really, I'm just here to see if I can knock on a door, introduce myself to Dev, have a deeper conversation before club opens and things get busy. But, you know, I'm here to network and get to know people. So here we are. There's me. These are my mates."
"Your mates? Well, I don't mean this as a complaint or a problem or a criticism, but I can't help but notice that you're the only android in the group. Are they also here to speak to Dev, to network?"
I turn to the group, allowing them to speak for themselves.
I nod in a exaggeratedly mechanical fashion. This time, instead of making the servos as quiet as possible, I make them as loud as possible.
This involves moving your eyebrows quite a lot, but fortunately, you can vibrate them a little bit without actually going like all the way up and down each time, so it doesn't have like a sarcastic overtone.
Now I want to know
how. 11.
See, I'm thinking instead about eyebrow vibrato.
Eyebrow vato.
Bravado.
That's my kind of bravado. We're almost rapping at this point.
we're
doing well.
Robin.
I also nod, but pointedly cross my arm so that the augment is on top of the crossed arms.
Apatia gives her sharp chrome smile, seemingly very earnest, not at all intentionally threatening. Tama is looking to the rest of you for cues and just gives a relatively affable nod.
"Yeah, well, I'll grant you that. I don't have many android friends, but where better to meet them?"
Mebby makes sort of a hand gesture that could mean point taken or could mean and, but speaks up and says, I think usually when people want to meet androids here, they come after the club is opened.
Maybe I'll do that too.
Mebby's chassis is not equipped to smile. So instead, they make a sound that is sort of the audible equivalent of one. I will attempt to reproduce it somewhat here as... and sort of like stands up from where they've been leaning and extends a hand to you, Ing, and says,
well, I think I was informally introduced yesterday, but I'm Mebby, Mebby Sin.
And, you know, shakes your hand sort of affably and then turns to the rest and kind of waves a little bit and says,
I think the rest of our introductions can wait until we're, well, somewhere a little more private,
and gestures with their head to what appears to be, to all, you know, normal and non-ground penetrating radar senses, a blank wall, but with no visible gesture or action of any kind, slides back to reveal a very narrow, unlit alleyway between the Canny Valley and its neighboring building, and without waiting for any particular kind of reply, strides down it.
I follow.
Okay, so I know Tama. I guess it's probably come up before, but I just want to make sure. Cal, your eyes are not augmented.
Right.
Okay. You will have a lot of trouble seeing once you pass the threshold. Everybody else probably does okay. So Cal and Tama are sort of like feeling and squinting a little bit. But for everybody else, as soon as you sort of enter this little alleyway, you will see that it is more or less featureless, save for like stickers and posters and things on either side, until towards the back there is a steep and narrow staircase leading up to the back of the second floor of the Canny Valley. Unusually, very unusually, it is made of wood. There is wood on Grand Cross. It is used mostly for like finishing in construction, you know, embellishments, countertops, some furniture if it's fancy. Stairs are almost always either metal or plastic.
Wow. Okay. Assuming that the path up the stairs is clear, I'll continue on up. And mm-hmm. is Mebby going ahead? Mm-hmm.
Leading the way.
Leading up that way? Mm-hmm. Great, great. All right. So continuing to follow, mm-hmm. you know, keeping my eyes open, not darting around, hopefully, in a very conspicuous way, but just keeping aware of my surroundings. Mm-hmm.
You get to the top of the stairs, there's a very small landing, and then to your right, 90 degrees, there is an equally narrow door, much more typical of the construction of the station, that is currently slid open. Mebby is standing in on the other side, sort of gesturing everybody into a room that is dimly but not atmospherically lit. It isn't warm, you know, mood lighting. It's just, you know, sort of very stark, almost industrial lighting at a very relatively low level for the space. The floor is sort of bare metal. The walls are adorned bare metal, in this case, with abstract decorations. It's unclear what the medium is in every case, but at least some of them are prints or posters. And there are a number of sort of standing tables, relatively small, about maybe 2 feet across. They're round. and no seating anywhere, and a number of similar metal doors lead out of the room. It is mostly empty, though, of people. Mebby is there, of course, and as you all file in, you're there. But Ing, you will see Dev Random, and two unfamiliar to you androids who have more sort of like off-the-rack chassis. See versions of most anywhere in the station. And so, it seems that Ing probably is the first one through the door after Mebby, but everyone who enters will then see this, though Tama and Cal are probably still squinting a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Iconic. So you said that there are the two kind of off-the-rack chassis, mm-hmm. and who else is in this room?
Dev and Mebby.
Dev. Yeah. Right. Okay. Dev, pleasure to see you. Thanks for making the time.
I have spent the time since we decided to come here trying to remember what I did for Dev Random's voice, and I have not remembered, so apologies to listeners who are going, what? That's not what Dev sounds like. Well, it is now, I suppose. So Dev had been looking at the door since it opened, and seeing you come in sort of gives you a relatively energetic wave, her sort of LED screen, for expressions, gives a fairly warm smile. And she says, oh, Ing, right? Yes, of course. Come on in and friends, by all means. And sort of gestures you over in that direction. The other two androids stay quiet for now and give body language of being a little nervous.
By means of diffusing tension a little bit, I either introduce them or allow them to introduce themselves. Mm-hmm. We're just collecting ourselves in the wake of the excitement yesterday. Figured it'd be a good time to have some conversations, some downtime, and, network a little bit.
Dev nods. The other two androids sort of, introduce themselves, but stay mostly reticent, I guess would be the word that I would use. Dev will gesture to each of the sort of more reticent androids in her company in turn, introducing them by name, and then they will sort of very matter-of-factly provide their pronouns following that. So Dev gestures to the first one and says, this is my friend Plexi. Plexi waves and says, hey, him. And then Dev gestures to the other one and says, and this is Mig, who gives you a, you can really only think of it as dorky thumbs up, and says, it's with a more mechanical voice processor than most androids choose to have. Now, you had mentioned that you would, do introductions for your friends as well, but this is the point at which Dev gestures for you to do so. So if there's any particular information that you are including there or that any of the others are, supplying, sort of additional information, then this is a good time for that.
When it comes time for me to, to be acknowledged or acknowledge my acknowledgement, I do say any, all.
You see Mig cock its head as though trying to figure out, are you saying that any and all pronouns are available or that your pronouns are any and all?
I don't know if I can interpret that gesture.
Yeah, it does seem to come to a conclusion either way.
Mm-hmm. Taking a cue from this, whenever it's my turn to be introduced, I say she, they.
Thomas stumbles at least a little bit, just, She, her.
Does the group finally have a queer or a straight person?
I don't think that that has been made entirely clear, but also you may be forgetting Gorister. We don't know anything other than
that. As I said in my recap, Gorister doesn't really count.
I mean, fair enough. He we know that he was, strongly inferred that he was attracted to Apatia. That doesn't mean that he's
he could be bi.
Yeah, exactly. But
he could be some flavor of trans for all we know as well.
You know, I think
there's a lot we don't ask about Gorister.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think what we have is we that don't he talk is
about Gorister.
No.
I think what we have is that Gorister, up till this point at least, has been the only candidate for perfectly cishet, but you know, no conclusions. In any case, after introductions have all been made, in the meantime, Mebby has sort of closed the exterior door and moved over to where the, you know, general gathering is, but said nothing further. Dev says, "Well, now that we're all acquainted, what brings you to our back room today?" And then, you know, sort of her LCD faceplate smirks and she says, "Oh, travelers."
Yeah, well, at this point, I kind of wish that I had a grand agenda, but honestly, you just seem like the kind of person that I'd want to get to know. And especially with things getting so interesting around here, it seems like the time not to isolate. Since we're here in speaking in private, I suppose that I'd also add that I suspect that we share the opinion that not everything that's illegal is immoral.
Dev looks like she's about to say something when Plexi kind of interrupts and goes, don't know a good way to say this, but what's up with your hand?
Yeah, you noticed, did you? It's new.
The
hand isn't new.
Shocked it took me this long.
Yeah, it's meant as a bit of a wake-up call. I don't think that anybody here needs it, but I think there's a real tendency that we've all seen, that we've all felt, to, for those that were born into flesh, to hold it as sacrosanct, somehow better than synthetic being. This is a bit of a subversion. People so cavalierly replace their biological bits with mechanical ones, without really feeling like it diminishes their humanity, and that humanity is better than anything else. So here's just a little reminder that flesh could be replaced as well. Mechanical bits with flesh. And I don't know, this might just start and end here, but it's, I guess, a bit of a threat's the wrong word. Provocation that more mechanical bits could be replaced by more biological ones, to the point that it gets uncomfortable for the people that should be.
Plexi looks intrigued. Mig looks uncomfortable. Dev is grinning, and Mebby is totally unreadable. But Tama only just noticed the hand when it was brought up and has gone kind of an ashen pale. And during your explanation, her gaze has turned decidedly inward. you're not sure that she necessarily caught all of it, but she hasn't said or done anything. Now, Dev, for her part, is smirking with her sort of LED faceplate. and sort of takes the initiative when you finish speaking to say, what are your thoughts on and history with the android rights movement here on the station, Ing?
Yeah, well, I suppose none of us has been here long, but for as long as I've been here, it didn't take me terribly long to recognize the way that things were, and pretty soon after that to join up with the android rights movement. I like to say that I'm active. I do as much as I can. Show up to meetings.
Dev's expression changes to a slightly considering one, and you think you hear Mebby chuckle slightly in the background, but Dev sort of turns to the rest of the group at large and says, while we have privacy and camaraderie, making sort of an expansive gesture, how about everyone else here? I noticed that none of you who came in with Ing are androids yourselves, though, you know, she kind of winks at Kato. Any of you have history with the movement?
On the margins, I'm quite supportive as a cavalier replacer of flesh and all. I think in general, you know, people are people and people can do as they like with the various materials available to them. And anyone who's got a problem with that, I've got a problem with.
I support Ing.
Apatia gives one of her grins and says, I am not closely involved, but I support anything that makes the people my parents associated with uncomfortable, and this certainly does. Besides, it's the right thing to do. So gazes slowly shift one by one to Tama, and she goes, well, I never thought about it that much, I guess, but today is a day for learning things. And she gives two thumbs up that are slightly less than totally convincing. Plexi and Meg are both sort of like hanging back. They're, you know, body language is very like wait and see. But Dev, for her part, wastes no time in turning back to Ing and saying, well, your friends seem mostly pretty okay, but you're well spoken. And
thank you.
Oh, well, speak only the truth. And you hear the slight whir of a servo as Mebby slightly behind you and to one side nods in agreement. And Dev says, and moreover, and this is a point where I should remind our listeners that everyone in here is looking up at Ing. Almost everywhere Ing goes, Ing is the tallest individual around. Dev says, you're imposing but gentle. You give off vibes of being approachable, and I like the idea, at least, behind the whole thing with your hand there. She glances across the assemblage here one more time and then says, all right, well, we're in private. And I get the feeling that not everybody here is particularly law-abiding. Thomas snorts.
I grin.
So does Apatia.
I exist.
I mean, you're not law abiding, but never mind.
Oh,
that.
I know.
But it's complicated.
It's yeah. complicated is the relationship status. A
situationship
of the
with the law. Yeah.
I mean, it's recently become much, much simpler.
In a way, that's true.
Yeah. Mm.
So Dev, having kind of glanced one more time over the assembled, says, so I'm going to lay some cards on the table. Both Plexi and Meg look at Dev kind of in an alarmed kind of way, but she just continues, says, this establishment is owned and operated by an organization called Law Zero. Are you familiar?
I'd like to say yes, but I only know what I've heard, and I suspect that that's not half the truth.
We've established that I haven't had any direct run-ins with Law Zero, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, they have not been particularly a presence in Selden District during your tenure on Grand Cross.
Then I, yeah, hang back and let Aang speak for the group.
Sure. So seeing, you know, sort of momentary reactions, you know, Dev then says, it's not exactly, as you all seem to know, a legally above board organization, and I won't claim that everything that members of Law Zero get up to is entirely pro-social, but I will say that I run this nightclub for them because I think they're our best shot at advancing the cause of android rights.
Understood. I appreciate the vote of confidence, and I am interested in hearing more when that feels appropriate, because I don't mind saying that when I first got here, and for a good while after that, I tried to make myself small. Tried to shrink, tried to be unobtrusive, to blend in, to make people more comfortable around me. And it was never enough. I could never be small enough. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm interested in exploring other possibilities.
While you're...
My face...
Go ahead.
My face is... Ing shares these things, transitions somewhere from the stoic mask that once was there to something akin to veiled heartbreak.
While you're talking, Ing, Dev, and you know, probably in your periphery, maybe are kind of nodding along while Plexi and Meg continue to mostly hang back. But when you finish, Mebby speaks up from behind you and says, I won't pretend like Law Zero is the ideal organization for realizing the goals of the android rights movement, but they are doing something when it seems that very few others are. And they do intend to, paraphrase you, take up space, which I approve of. And Dev picks up and says, and I bring it up because I would like your clear-eyed participation, your an approachable face in the way that we often lack in our organization. And I think that we could use someone like you in a, well, initially small, but generally public-facing role. I don't want an answer right now, you understand, but I want you to think about it. You know where to find me now, and let's exchange contact information. And Mebby speaks up and says, yes, let's. And Dev continues. I think we could do a lot together, if you're willing. There's a pause, And if no one particularly interjects, she'll continue to say, of course, if you say anything about this conversation, I will claim that it never happened. So, you know, goes without saying that we're all perfectly deniable here and so on and so forth. Plexi nods behind Dev. But, Dev continues, if you are willing and you prove to be relatively trustworthy, you and your friends, then you can see about making this an ongoing relationship. I think even beyond the cause of android rights, we might have some goals in common. I did hear that the riot suppression tank the other day was disabled in a way that, well, it would be hard for a human to do at any rate.
Yes. So I heard. I don't expect that particular android will be showing up again, but I'm glad that people were saved.
I take the slightest step forward and offer. It seems there were multiple androids present at PSS during the riot. According to rumors, anyway, there was one that was responsible for breaking those kids out of containment, killing Lou Tupper. Apparently was covered in red LEDs and had a katana.
Dev seems genuinely surprised when you mention that Lou Tupper is dead, but doesn't say anything specific.
It's worth noting that it feels more like the powers that be trying to put further blame on Law Zero.
Dev takes the surprisingly human gesture, sort of like rubbing her chin, and her LED faceplate looks thoughtful. And she says, well, that's good for me to know. What say? Whoever's interested comes back after we open officially this evening. And finds me at the club for a private conversation after you've had some time to mull some things over. At that point, we can maybe do some more information sharing and make some plans.
Well, thank you, Dev. You've been incredibly welcoming and forthcoming. I will think further on our potential for moving forward together. Mm-hmm. I should also mention that there's one member of our party that's not here. If we do end up doing some work together, if you've got any need for someone that is able to get past firewalls, we've got a gremlin.
That is more or less the sound that Dev makes. And from behind you and to one side, you hear Mabiko. but Dev says, well, if you're a relatively formal organization, by all means, bring whoever you'd like in on what we've talked about so far. And to the club, if they're interested, we need allies, and I could do with some answers, and I think we can, you know, productively collaborate, if nothing else. In the meantime, I do have some, and she sort of gestures casually over one shoulder toward where Plexi and Mig are sort of lurking, you know, giving muted reactions to the conversation as it goes on. Do have some business to attend to. Not that I am not enjoying you all's company, just that there are only so many hours in the day. Shall I see you this evening?
I'd look forward to it. See if I can scrape up the cover.
She nods. She says, maybe we'll see you out. We don't distrust you. It's just that the door only opens for authorized personnel.
Of course. You see Mr. Snuggles. Say hi for us.
Her LED faceplate grins, and she says, I can't remember the last day I didn't see Mr. Snuggles on. I'm glad you're acquainted. And then, yeah, waves bye to everybody. And, I mean, you know, of course you all have agency over your characters, but maybe we'll guide you all out if no one is doing anything else. At the door, maybe we'll catch your hand, your metal one, Ing, and tap you on the forehead with a finger saying, just in case. And your given the disconcerting sensation of having Mebby's contact information added to your memory banks without any sort of offer confirm step.
Wow. Okay. Ing adopts a surprised posture, nods, and moves along.
The door will close, and maybe gives you sort of like a little finger wave as the door closes. By this point, I will assume that, I mean, Bronwy has been up. Bern, did you stay up?
I mean,
you
mentioned that I would be aware, like, we've exchanged coffee. If you
yes, recall. Yes, yes. But I suppose, was just making sure that you weren't, like, you know, slinking back into hacker sleep afterward. I have done as much, so I figured it was possible that Bern might.
No, I think that sort of awake and tired of the day already, sort of existence by the coffee machine.
Fair enough. I suppose it ends up, the ball ends up in your court, because Bronwy will socialize to the degree that you invite, but, you know, otherwise is capable of occupying herself. You know, if the overtures are not made on your end. So how does the interim go for you and Bron Weeburn?
Probably at about the point where it seems like she's going to wander off, I realize, shit, I have to actually be the one to say something and ask her what her plans for the day are, if indeed any.
She kind of gives a sigh. Oh, well, I guess I was going to go check and see if my place was still being surveilled and go from there. But I guess I don't know how long everyone else will be. I'm curious about this Canny Valley place, but I don't want to try and play catch up on this outing either. I don't know. Is there anything going on here? Or are you closed for inventory? Or, I mean...
I think we're closed for there was a riot yesterday.
She nods with sort of a twisted, smirky frown.
But us being closed doesn't mean a damn thing, I think, as far as your presence or absence. I suspect that in the fullness of time, Cato will return, and there will be or could be mischief afoot at that point.
Gee. Gives a slightly crooked little smile and says, that does seem likely. Well, I suppose if there's anything that needs doing around here that I could help with, I'm happy to do that. But, you know, otherwise I'll just go check in on my stuff and then check back in here, hopefully, once everybody's back.
I think checking in your stuff is always the secure option. I think that if you have any thoughts on state actor tiers of spyware, I'd be interested to hear about it.
She sort of knits her brow and goes, no, I don't. I'm much more of a mechanics and firmware kind of gal, but I may know some folks. I can be discreet.
I mean, discretion is a thing I do, yes. But if you would be able to set up a meet between me and these contacts, that would be lovely.
They do tend to be shy, but I'll see what I can do.
If it helps, my handle does have at least somewhat of a rep.
Good to know. She gives you a briefly considering look, and then, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation and accent, but she sort of like gives you a small wave from near the door and says, "Bye, Don, maybe Nemet," which you understand because it's Farsi and it means see you later, at least according to Google Translate. I do not speak Farsi. I am relying on the.
Yeah, I also do not speak Farsi. But Bern, who does, responds appropriately and in kind.
She presumably goes to check on her place, leaving you with run of the shop for at least a little bit.
Yeah, the shop's locked down.
I would love to get from you and I'm looking at your character sheet here for just a moment. Well, I'm going to do one of those annoying GM things. I'm going to tell you to roll 2d6 and tell me what you get. Yeah, and I will do the math on my end.
That is an 8.
8. So that's... Okay. You start discreetly looking into the spyware that you found on Vector Ramirez's machine when you tried to access it. And it's not entirely surprising to you that it's like not on this universe's version of GitHub or anything, but you basically confirm your suspicion that this is not commercially available software. And from the features you were able to observe of it, it is consistent with the security software design ethos of government back on Earth.
Sure.
That said, it doesn't have anything that specifically makes you think it was sourced from the government.
So it could have just been personnel overlap in some fashion.
Yeah, it could even, I mean, the way this stuff goes, it could even have been like various different layers of national and corporate espionage sort of playing telephone with one another. As a layer makes this actually kind of even more difficult to trace specifically because it's, you know, a multinational, multilateral effort to get the thing up and running. So if this is
right
station government stuff, God knows what the lineage of this software was.
Sure. At
the very least, it does confirm to you that you made the right decision in burning the connection when you did, because this is fairly aggressive in its software design ethos. And it certainly was like a DARPA-esque
Also, for reference, project. As I am looking into this thing, I am under like double the usual number of layers of VPN and like actively as ghosting as possible.
Certainly. You are using as much caution as it is conceptually possible to use, no matter how much longer pages take to load, or, you know, you're part of being secure is being patient, and so you are good at this. And you can't nail down any sort of exact source, but you do essentially confirm your hypothesis that this is spook tier stuff to the point of being almost experimental. And you can't be 100% sure what this says about Vector Ramirez, other than that he has some very interesting friends.
Yes.
I think I'll actually also rule with the role you made that, like, you're kind of able to confirm just by sort of probing lightly that this isn't typical of PSS terminals. This is pretty unique to Ramirez, which you probably thought was the case, but you are able to confirm.
Good to confirm. Who the fuck is this dude? I might actually, like, start some very light, similarly guarded.
Mm-hmm.
Finger walking inquiries.
Sure. Give me another 2d6. Tell me what you get. I will apply bonuses as necessary.
All right. Why did I move those 2d6 away from me? That is a 10.
Okay.
Not doubles.
Thank you for clarifying. Yeah, you start some...
The 8 also was not doubles.
I assumed you would have told me if it was, but thank you for the clarification. Yeah. You do some, sort of very light investigation, and it's interesting because you are able to verify that a Vector Ramirez under that name was involved in a variety of law enforcement as well as security and intelligence sort of capacities, both on Earth and in the early stages of Grand Cross. But a ton of what you are able to access about any of that is, like, actually factually successfully redacted.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Don't love that.
That probably at least gets you to where the rest of the party is exiting the Canny Valley. So let's briefly hop back over to our other player characters. Now that you're back on the street, what's your next move?
I would likely suggest that we return to the frontispiece so we can fully bring Tama up to speed.
Yeah, Tama very emphatically agrees. Apatia sort of, like, with uncharacteristic timidity, speaks up and says, I probably should go for now. All of this, and she gestures to all of the augments on the back of her head and neck, requires some maintenance from time to time, and it takes some time, so maybe this is a good time for me to dip, though she sounds regretful about it.
All right. Well, don't be a stranger. And reach back out when you're recharged. It's nice to spend some time.
She nods emphatically. And Tama speaks up and says, yeah, no, you're great company. And seems to consider several forms of address and then discards them all before continuing on and says, it's been both interesting and a pleasure to make your acquaintance. And sort of gives, like, a little two-finger hat tip slash salute. Mm. And Apatia sort of bids everybody a good day and heads off in the vague direction of a different corner of Selden District from where the frontispiece is located. I guess everybody heads back to the frontispiece, yeah.
We probably avoid talking too openly about whether we're going to join a gang until we're back in the frontispiece.
Sure enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tama seems to be having a little bit of nerves, and so as you go, we'll keep up, like, an intermittent patter about, like, oh, that was a pretty good restaurant. Ooh, have you ever shopped there? Their scented candles are really good. And just, like, random sort of like commentary on stuff. It's not constant at all, but here and there she'll offer some commentary, seemingly just kind of, you know, feeling nervous about what she's about to get read in on. In due time,
I respond in kind, though, when subjects such as shopping and or scented candles come up, I woefully have nothing to share.
Yeah. The one thing in this whole sequence that does kind of stick out is as you are re-entering Selden District, you do so about a block away from Brock Choi's greengrocer. And she points and she goes, "Oh, in that direction, there's a really good greengrocer. And let me tell you, the proprietor is yummy."
I snort and say, "Brock, really?"
She gives you an incredulous look and goes, "Yeah." I mean, he's not like stylish, but have you seen those shoulders, those forearms, his voice?
I nod in the way that someone who definitely has not noticed those things would not.
Thomas' grin approaches impish. In due time, you arrive back at the frontispiece, coincidentally and conveniently, at around about the same time as Bronwy. You know, she sort of is a little further down the alley as your group arrives at the door, and she gives you a cheerful little wave, and hustles back up and says, "Oh, hey, how was the Canny Valley?"
"Closed."
She does laugh. She goes, "Yeah, I figured. Let's get inside." And everybody presumably troops in. Tama, sort of looking around curiously at the very limited amount of space, which didn't have anybody in it, I assume, because Burn very rarely, I would guess, spends time alone in the back room.
Yeah, why would I go out, like, into the center of everything where no one is?
Exactly.
Also, like, unless Kato is leading, there is a better than even odds chance I will make them actually knock.
That's a decent point. I didn't ask, but I suppose it doesn't register as anything particularly untoward to anybody if it does happen. So we,
okay. We'll say that it does. Observe. Because I am deep in being careful about whatever the fuck Ramirez is.
Yeah, this probably also reads as really normal to Kato, so, you know, yeah, it goes largely uncommented upon.
Once the doors are closed and locked again, I just sort of round on Cal with, "What the fuck was Ramirez's deal?"
I hold up.
His information has been redacted.
Yeah.
I cannot stress the degree to which that is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
God, you are so fucking unhelpful. I go and get more coffee.
Fair enough. This involves taking maybe 3 steps.
Yeah, it's the point of the thing.
Sure, sure.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I take it you two had more of a cordial working relationship rather than sort of a close sharing personal secrets about state entity level security on your computers. One.
You could say that.
If you don't want to talk about a thing, maybe say that. This is your opportunity to do that, Cal.
I don't think this is the time. Have you met Tama?
Tama gives a little finger wave from a couple steps behind Cal and says...
Haven't met, but I've observed your handiwork.
Tama sort of straightens her shoulders a little bit and says, Yeah, this all seems pretty interesting, though I lack some context, I think. I pride myself on my handiwork, I guess. Glad you're a fan. Anyway, this is a cool area. Weird for a bookstore. It grins while she says that to make it not like a threat.
Apologies for throwing you on the front lines without any briefings just then.
She gives a one shoulder shrug and says, Hey, I chose to come along on the side excursion, so been eye opening and no big deal. This is maybe the second or third most exciting thing that's happened to me in a few weeks.
I once again introduce everyone, mm-hmm. but this time with their sort of function attached to it. So Kato, I say, is a fixer. Mm-hmm. Bird, I introduce as the teenage hacker. and then Ing as...
I specify matchstick in case it gets any sort of reaction from Tama. Mm-hmm.
It gets a blink that could mean anything.
Mm-hmm. And then I give a very specific and yet still strategically vague breakdown of more or less everything that has happened. I leave out very critical details. Don't mention Ramirez, of course. I do not ever refer to myself as the Revenant, though it is heavily implied, obviously. I do not mention my role in the PSS, but rather mention the mission to take them down internally, more or less based on a protest that was mishandled prior to their formation, and then give a pretty decent insight into what I was up to at the riot without, again,
right,
aligning any of my work as a PSS officer.
Yeah.
But rather my pursuit of the android, Tupper's death. I leave out the fact that Ing took out the tank, but mentioned that I was present for that, and sort of taper off from there.
Yeah. I'm going to make a roll on Tama's behalf here. And for what it's worth, while you are doing this, Bronwy is like going through like 2 cups of equal parts sugar and coffee, and sort of grinning at some points and kind of chortling at others.
Also of note, of course, when I'm bringing up anything that has anything to do with Maddie, I refer to it just more clinically, like there were deaths at a previous protest and following up to bring justice to those who continue to be put in a position of power. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
The usual withholdingness.
Sure. Tala rolled particularly well there.
Good lord.
If there is anything that seems like it is worth revealing without violating OPSEC, that information drops itself onto whatever Tama's device is.
Yeah.
For about long enough for her to check it, and then it goes away again.
Mm-hmm. And her device is a smartphone. It is so. And after all of this, Tama sort of looks thoughtful and considering and then looks at Cal and goes, You I don't publicize it a lot, but I came here as a builder. I've been here almost as long as anyone. And I have been a, I guess the technical term, it sounds weird to say, but I've been a police demilitarization activist since I was back on Earth, when she just gestures without further explanation at the scar on the left side of her face. I was at that protest. You know, the one that got PSS the contract. I wasn't close to that kid who died, but I was acquainted with him. Seems like he maybe made a big impact on you. She gives you...
I go and get coffee.
You see as you are turning away...
I smirk at you.
You see as you're turning away that Tama's nod is an approving one, and she doesn't elaborate any further.
Here's a question for you, Adam. Mm-hmm. Because she has been moonlighting as the Revenant, mm-hmm. and the specific... holographic projection armor is Maddie's face.
Mm-hmm.
Does she clock it?
She hasn't given you specific indication here.
Okay. I come back with the my coffee mug cradled strangely between two hands, mm-hmm. which is not how I usually take my coffee. Mm-hmm. And I ignore Burn's smirk. I don't even look in his direction. mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to know that I haven't covered?
Tama looks thoughtful. And then she sort of smiles a little deviously and she says, well, I guess I want to know it all, but no, I think you've been very forthcoming. In the moment, I don't need anything else to know that whether you're individually badass or not, though, I mean, she just gestures at Cal and goes, yeah, come on. Collectively, y'all are badass, and I think we can get more done together than we could by ourselves. So I don't know if you all have this impression or not, but, well, I get the feeling that things are about to get really fucking dicey on this station. And, you know, better to have some musketeers than go it alone. She sort of chuckles. Says, so, if you'll abide my meat-headedness, then I'd appreciate the chance to cooperate. But if not, I do get it. So I don't know how useful I'll be, but it seems like we're probably going to do more as a group than I do by myself. So happy to join up if that's the invitation.
Hey, Tama.
Hmm?
I am looking at Cal as I say this. You happen to recognize the face on Revenant's armor?
Tama. I'm trying to think of a not terribly crass way to say this because the phrase that popped into my mind, Tama gets a look on her face like she just smelled a fart. And then goes, yeah. I mean,
I look between both of them.
I wasn't going to mention it, but I did recognize it. Yeah. I thought it was actually really kick-ass because, you know, face of opposition to police brutality. She blinks rapidly.
Yeah. He was my kid.
Oh. Shit, I'm sorry. That... I don't want this to sound flippant or anything, but that fucking sucks. Do you hug? Do you want a hug?
I guess.
She gives you a big bear hug.
Oh my gosh.
She is shorter than you, but she does manage to sort of like very slightly lift you off the ground with this bear hug. Briefly, not for a long time.
I look,
go ahead,
startled and kind of give the awkward distant relative hug back.
Yeah, yeah. As she's putting you down, she goes, "I'm so fucking sorry. I really tried." Her voice is a little thick while she says that.
If Cal is in a place where eye contact can be made, I will just sort of raise my eyes or my eyebrows in a very "told you so" gesture.
I kind of shrug a single shoulder in Burn's direction and then focus in on Tama. "Tried?"
"I mentioned I was there, right? I was not close. But I kind of saw it not quite in time. And I tried to get there. I'm sorry. If I had... I don't know what I could have done, but I wish I could have done something."
"Well, thank you."
I don't feel like I should be thanked, but I also..." This is all pitched pretty low. It's not like no one else can hear it, but it's sort of, you know, the tone conveys that it is like kind of supposed to be between the two of you, and after kind of struggling for a moment, she goes, I think about it a lot, actually. I've done pretty well actually keeping people safe over the years, but that's one of a handful of really significant failures, and I really wish I could have done something."
"You and I both."
She gives a slightly bitter chuckle and says, "That's both comforting and not, but..." And she sort of straightens up and raises her pitch a little bit and says, "That's why I guess we're all in this together, right? So we can get the bastards." And then turns to look at Burn first, and then the rest of the group, and then... "So, who are the bastards in this case? What's our plan?"
I want to suss out who attacked Tupper. Rule out Law Zero. PSS has been running scared from them for some time. I've got something of a list of people who were responsible for allowing that situation to unfold and then giving the power to the wrong people.
Tama gives a vicious and feral grin and says, "I'm in then." And I think that's going to be a pretty good place for us to end this session of Dice Punks. I anticipate that after a little bit of sort of opening, you know, scene next time, we'll probably have at least a little bit of more sort of like time lapse is the wrong word, but you know, sort of sped up time to cover. So be thinking about what you'd be getting up to with a sequence of series of days at your disposal. But we'll have the rest of this conversation and this meeting at the beginning to kind of set the tone and see what we come up with for our next big undertaking at the start of our next session, our next episode. I think that given the pace we've been going at, it's appropriate to give everybody one experience point for this session. So go ahead and mark that down. And I anticipate that sometime in the next couple we'll be getting another one or two. So, you know, be thinking about it. But that'll conclude this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on Tumblr and Blue Sky is at dicepunks. Parenthetically, I'll admit, I don't really check Blue Sky that often these days, because it's really stressful to see the news, and I try to control my exposure to it in a more clinical fashion, but I do try to see if there are any notifications. So please do interact with us on Blue Sky. Just know that I might be a day or two behind in seeing it. But with that, I think we're ready to say farewell. So say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. Things back on Earth sound interesting. Take care of yourself and take care of each other down there.
Yeah, I was going to quip about the episode, but I think current circumstances have hopefully not worsened by the time this airs. And just take care of one another.
You hear?
Thanks for listening, folks. And to bridge the gap between the world and the episode, sometimes taking care of others means pushing them into new situations.
Well, thank you for listening. And to stretch this further and avoid both the real world and the episode, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
We are not actually part of Star Wars canon. Please, God, no.
No. My understanding, I haven't watched season 2 of Andor yet, but my understanding is you still never find out who or what a Bothan actually is.
No. I think they just straight up murdered a bunch of Bothans and then pretended that that was part of the mission.
In any case, as the poet once said, grief is the light. Grief is the light. I can't deny I'm afraid of you.
Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for Luke's lies. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their other work at the link in the show notes. Editing on our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who has appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage. Well, Armitage, anyway. Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Michevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva Janda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwired island. Links to the system and authors can be found in the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks After Show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
It's been a busy few weeks. I seem to have found a family, although one by fiat rather than whatever else. At a certain point, it's hard to consider that or much else that's happened because there's so much to do and I'm so tired. Fuck, is this what adulting is like? Just having too much to do and being tired for forever? Ugh. I don't know how the rest of them do it. They're old, after all, although that doesn't really stop them from being at least as dumb as my age cohort, real or legal. Well, never mind that. The work doesn't stop, and neither can I. If I'm going to live up to expectations, I need to, well, live up to expectations. I wonder if I'd push myself so hard, if I had parents that I knew, who'd been around. That's not a useful line of thought, when I have government surveillance to look into. And there's still the Hear You files, and whatever the fuck's going on with IMX. Try to keep up, too, with such work as comes into the frontispiece. I think I might just start declaring that I'm from nowhere if people ask me. I'm from the net. A digital native, if you will. Easier that than acknowledging the nuances of flesh. Cal would approve of that answer.
Hello